minutes, which is astounding at ARA for questions and comments from the audience, so I hope you can try and take advantage of that. Take a minute to jot down a question
Did you bring those paper balls?
I did not.
We're the Twizzlers.
That's right. Find someone who's different. We have a couple of people who are ready, other people maybe getting their ideas set. So let's take three questions or comments, and then we'll get a little response from the panel and see if we can get some discussion on that.
I'll stand up. See me. So I'm coming from the community of design-based research and curriculum design and scaffolding. And I think that one thing that I'm hearing here that may help with the connection is actually a bridge. There are the strategies, which are the sort of trite things that you might think practice, and there's the vision, but what seems to be missing is a layer of principles. So if you think about what we mentioned with the memory and the idea of learning names, if you think of the vision as a community of learners, knowledge building community, and the actual very specific strategy of learning kids' names pretty much right off the bat, principle might be developing community memory, or not the principle, sorry, the scribe, the idea of the scribe. The principle there might be community memory. So maybe one thing that we should be trying to articulate, or what is that mid-level of principles that sort of bridge and connect? It's actually a level. It might be more than an annotation, but a level. And the work that relates to that I've done in the past is providing a vision and then a principle and then a strategy for example, scaffolding software for science city grant. And we found that those three levels, finding out what the need, what the problem, what the vision is, the principle, and then a slew of strategies might help someone like Emily. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to figure out what to do with the scribe, okay, that's not going to work. I don't have a whole 15 minutes to devote to the scribe. But if you understand the design rationale for the strategy, it might allow you to make better shortcuts or changes or adaptations to that.
Mm-hmm. Pam's also written a little bit about principles and practices and work with Peter Smagorinsky and others. Maybe we'll come back to that in a second.
Well, I was kind of curious the novice teachers about the contextual factors at your school site that currently allow you to continue to engage in the reflective practice, and whether or not your relationship with I'm forgetting everybody's name.
Tom
is allowing you that opportunity for reflection on practice. And what I'm finding in the talk about teacher education is that it's not enough. It's not connected to the work of professional development at the school site. Mm-hmm. And so professional developers are not doing what teacher educators are doing, and that conversation needs to be connected. And opportunities for reflective practice and documentation of practice are not happening at the school site. And I understand that your situations are very unique at your schools, that you get to choose texts. And so I'm very curious about the contextual factors that are going on at your school site and whether or not you have supports. You have supports to give you that ongoing opportunity for reflection. Or is it your relationship with Tom and the website?
So we'll come to that question in just a second, but first I want to get one more question on the table. Go ahead. Yeah.
After 5 days of attending any one of a number of these kinds of sessions, let me say, as a secondary English teacher of 34 years, that this has been the most inspiring and hopeful session I have attended, and I congratulate all of you, Tom and Pam, and especially Travis and Emily. It seems to me, after all these years, one of the observations that you constantly hear from the practitioners in the classroom is how dissatisfying or unsatisfying their teacher preparation experience has been. And it's an unfortunate and I think largely an unwarranted reputation, but I trust this kind of experience that you two folks, and I hope you have a website similar to Yvonne's 30 years from now. That will be the real test. No, I say that because I fear that folks like you who have very quickly because of your own hard work and introspection. I don't know where on earth you found the time to do all this, which is an element that has not been mentioned. Unfortunately, too often, I remember Herbert Cole inspiring me when he wrote 36 Children, and then he disappeared from the classroom in the Bronx that was the springboard for his book. So I really will, if I'm still alive, look for your website 7 years down the road. But this has been really phenomenal. I congratulate you, and I hope this spreads.
Thank you. And we should probably, in terms of contextual factors, not only have they done this, but Travis has had a child and Emily's getting married. All the same. There's real life here as well in this classroom. But what about those contextual factors? What that has allowed or not allowed you to reflect on your practice and perhaps continue your learning?
I think the nature of the beast is, at least in New York City, teacher does what he or she wants, closes the door, and no one bothers him or her. And I think that, my sense is that this pedigree of going to this type of school suggested to my administrator that it was okay to close the door and do whatever I wanted. So I think that's what allowed me to play, really, with this. I think that, unfortunately, I think one of the minuses, I think, of the small school movement is that everyone is doing so many different things, and so it becomes very, very hard to reflect as a school community. So when I was when I was teaching this class, I was also coordinating all of the student activities for the entire high school. And so if there were maybe like a chairperson, right, to say, well, let's spend some time, let's look at each other's practice, let's visit classrooms, that doesn't happen because, people are doing a multitude of things. And so clearly it was Tom who really facilitated the reflection on my part. Fortunately and unfortunately.
It was a little like teacher education. They had no idea what they were getting into.
I would have to echo what Travis said. I found that in my first year, I should say that when we were at Stanford, we had a supervisor who was in our classrooms once a month at least, and we met with our supervisory group and our supervisor once a week. So we were getting constant feedback. We had lots of time to reflect one-on-one with our supervisor and with our supervisory group. It's what fueled my desire to become better at what I was doing. It's what kept me interested in what I was doing. I had that a little bit my first year of teaching. I was teaching in Houston, and that's because I had a mentor at my school. So she came to my classroom once a month, and we talked once a month. Ever since then, I think I've been observed twice, period. It's something that's really been lacking. I talk about it. I was just talking about this last night with another professor that I had dinner with. It wasn't until Tom came in. It's unfortunate. I mean, I do my own reflection. It's nothing formal. It's just, this lesson did not work. What am I going to do differently? That's the extent of it, in all honesty.
That's the fundamental problem at what's going on in schools. Is that their opportunities to reflect on their practice on an ongoing basis don't exist. And all these excellent components of teacher ed programs that teach teachers to reflect on their practice are lost as soon as they get dumped into the field.
Let's take a couple more questions. So let's go all the way to the back. And then.
A couple of thoughts. I'm a person with literally kind of a foot in both worlds. I do teacher education here in New York City at Queens College. I teach music for elementary classroom teachers. And then I'm also affiliated with an organization at Teachers College that does professional development, the National Academy for Excellent Teaching. And I'd like to ask the more veteran teacher educators, one of the things that I come across in the professional development role, particularly among more veteran teachers, and in New York City, sometimes that means, you know, 5 to 7 years, is a resistance, particularly with some of the media things. Oh, well, that's East LA. I'm in the South Bronx. It won't work here. And so you find an example from the South Bronx, and oh, well, their principal does blah, 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 and mine won't, so it won't work here. How do you get over that resistance, even in a young veteran, that I'm just going to do what I'm going to do with my door closed and leave me alone, regardless of whether what they're doing is working or not?
So that's a good, I sometimes call that the other people's context problem. So we had one question here and then one in the front. Go ahead.
I have a question for Emily and Travis around whether Yvonne or you all call on your students and ask them to reflect on their experiences as learners and go beyond just describing what happened to what did it mean in terms of what supported our learning, what got in the way, how might we as a community, a teacher and students together, shift what we're doing so that the ball experiment is not just has to be figured out by you, Travis, but is figured out by the class.
Question about context and then reflection of students and so on.
I'm a doc student at Ohio State, and I've been working on for the last 3 years with my advisor on a statewide mathematics coaching program. And we are in fact trying to engage in-service teachers in reflective practice with the support of job embedded coaching. And I was very fascinated by this. When I came because of Magdalene Lampert was the discussant. And when I got here and I saw this literacy thing going on, I was quite surprised. But then I was like, wow, that's good stuff. And so here I am still. The question I have is, are these videos available and are there any mathematics or any practice like that? Because you're right, teachers, you know, if I were to show them these literacy videos, like, well, what does that have to do with me? I'm teaching math, and you're helping, you know. So, but even though we do K-5, so maybe we could get away with it, but then we'd have to get into the whole literacy discussions. And so are there any mathematics examples on here? And I think this is really great. The other thing I would add is that I think that Emily and Travis are very willing participants in this reflective practice. And what we've learned is that teachers who are not willing or in a space where they're ready to be reflective, they're not. So it's really not for all teachers. It's really for those who are really at a space where they're ready to do that.
So just to address the question again, within the Quest project and also at the Carnegie Foundation, you'll find some math websites as well as some math teacher educators who have sites there. And Magda, you may know of other examples of math sites that maybe you could afterwards.
Well, I think the interesting thing about this website called Inside Teaching, which is pretty easy to remember, you don't have to write down all those HTPs and so on. But Inside Teaching has videos both of classroom teachers and of teacher educators using the classroom teachers in teacher education settings. So it's a collection of the sort of work that people are doing in different subject matter areas similar to what Pam's doing. I think Pam is doing the best example of this kind of work. I'm not shy to say that, but there are some examples there in mathematics. But you should build something.
Well, yeah, we're thinking about it and working on it, and the work is hard.
So what about this question about the context, other people's context?
I think that's one of actually, we knew that going in, that there's always that resistance. And I'd actually used a Vaughn site in other courses, and the first thing that people, teachers always asked is, where'd you get those kits? those must be magic kits. They're not real kits. I said, well, what's real? And one of the ways, one of the reasons I developed the kind of assignment I did was to take the attention away, in some senses, from looking at a Vaughn, or I have to be like a Vaughn, or I can't be like a Vaughn, or, you know, to sort of say, these are things that you can actually try. Let's try them and see what happens. And I get that same pushback from my student teachers. I can't do this because we haven't established the norms for discussion in my classroom. I can't do this because my cooperating teacher doesn't. I can't. I get a lot of I can'ts. But this is one of the advantages of being in a university class, is I can say, well, no, actually, you have to do this. Let's figure out how you can. And every year we negotiate, and there's always something they can do. And actually, I have some nice video clips of the power. Actually, one of them is Emily's. Of who she was working in a class in which the teacher hadn't set those norms, and she was worried about trying to do this. So one of the things she did was just to try some small things. And one of the power of that is you can see the shifts almost immediately, how it shifts the discourse, how, and it gives you then hope, well, maybe I can. You know, maybe I have to start in a different place. I have to adapt this to my context. But I think that one of the things that we have to, and again, it's part of teaching is so complex, teaching is so contextual. And yet there are practices, as Magdalene would say, also routines, that cut across contexts, that will be adapted to those specific contexts, but focusing on those principles and those practices and saying, okay, let's try them out in those contexts, begins to, I think, build a willingness to experiment that goes beyond that, well, it can't happen if it's in a classroom that's not exactly like my own.
I think another issue around context is that often when people make statements in response to having looked at a small piece of data, what they're expressing is an assumption. Like, you know, that teacher doesn't have to live by the same standards that I have to live by. And there's no evidence for that. They just sort of use what's in the clip to make that assumption. So one of the rich things about Travis and Emily's website is there is a lot of information on those websites. And you could turn people back and say, well, let's look at what's here. You know, you assume that this teacher doesn't have to teach, that they can choose their own text. And, you know, can we find information on this website about, you know, what are the texts that they're using and why are they using these texts and so on, rather than allowing people to make assertions that are actually interpretations or assumptions, to push those back and have them look for evidence.
And let's conclude with this question around the student reflection, how you engage students in that.
Start. I do reflection a lot with the students. It's always a sort of like their exit card, but it's a lot of reflection on their own participation in the discussion and sort of summarizing the key ideas that came out of the discussion. I've actually never tried having them reflect on the strategies that we used during the discussion and the way that I scaffolded the discussion, and I think that's a great idea. Why didn't I think of that? Sorry, gotta do that. Yeah.
I actually have students to reflect on the group discussion, and I think by and large, lots of students say it was great to listen to other people talk. It was great that people listened to me when I spoke because they had to. I think that my my more garrulous students, I think, felt almost imprisoned because they could only speak twice. But I think, but by and large, everyone enjoyed it. You know, I think lots of students, because I asked them to write down their ideas, they didn't necessarily feel like they were being called on the spot. So they had something where which they could refer in order to make their comments. So I think by and large, every time I do this, and I was actually really surprised because, you know, students dislike everything, but they really liked this activity.
Yeah, if you can just go back to the previous slide, I don't know if it's possible, but the last thing I would just add is, you know, so these are just four of the websites that have been developed. They're in different kinds. They're different varieties. They're different quality. They're different genres. But I think part of the point is that we are now at a point where I think we can develop a variety of representations in different contexts, different subject matters, different places. So in fact, when Pam teaches now group discussion, she has a set of websites she can use. But there have also been a set of websites developed around the teaching of Shakespeare, including Avon, teaching in two different contexts. So we have Avon teaching group discussion of a call to assembly, and we also have Avon teaching in Romeo and Juliet. We have experienced teachers teaching Shakespeare. We have teachers early in their career, like Travis and Van, teaching this. So we can begin to create a variety of comparisons and contrasts, which I think are going to be tremendously important, and they're some of the issues that we want to explore in that exhibition. But I just want to thank you all for coming, and especially thank you.
Thank you. You were really fantastic. And I have to say, just getting to know you.